Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with John Kemp, author of Expressions of Place, the Contemporary Louisiana Landscape. We'll also hear from poet Andrea Panzica, whose new collection is Rusted Bells and Daisy Baskets. John Kemp writes about art with passion and insight and long experience. He's contributed to more than a dozen books about Louisiana art and written some of his own, but I think none may be more deeply felt than his newest, Expressions of Place, the Contemporary Louisiana Landscape. John Kemp, welcome. Welcome to The Reading Life.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
What a gorgeous book.
Thanks.
37 artists are represented here, and I'm sure you had to make some really tough choices.
Yes, I did. Well, first of all, finding the 37 artists, I located all across Louisiana from Shreveport to Monroe to New Orleans, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and all points in between. You know, and the state has so many talented artists. It was difficult to make that final choice. And it was kind of interesting when I was compiling the book and writing the text. I discovered even more artists that I wanted to include in the book, but the publisher said, I'm sorry, we're going to press.
We have to draw the line.
You can't anymore. But, you know, at least a half dozen more that I would love to have included, but maybe some other time.
Always hard choices.
Oh, definitely.
Mm. And I love that they're all across the state, that you show the Louisiana landscape in all its infinite variety.
Well, you know, I've been writing about Louisiana artists and other Southern artists for a little over 35 years now, and I've crossed the state every point, and I've always been fascinated how painters, in particular, interpret the landscape around them. And that's what I was concentrating primarily on in this book, was how artists, in their various styles, from realism to almost totally abstract painting, how they interpret their immediate environment. And I've always found that quite interesting.
Now, some of these artists are really well-known. Willie Birch, Jacqueline Bishop, Adrian Dekbar, Roland Golden, whom you said was the first artist.
Yeah, he was the first one I wrote about, yes.
It's so great. Simon Gunning, Elmore Morgan Jr., George Rodrigue, Phil Sandusky, and Robert Warrens among them. So you have those established figures, but you have some newer ones, younger ones as well.
Well, that was the interesting thing. Now, I just didn't want to concentrate on those who've established their reputations, and many of them have international reputations. But the point of the book was not fame. The point of the book was how they look at that landscape, how they interpret and how they see that landscape, and how that imagination moves through the brush to the canvas. And many of these artists, really, they're not well established. They kind of had their following in their own hometowns and their own parts of the state. And that's important, too, because, you know, we're talking about the land and the landscape and how artists interpret that. So that was the point, not fame, necessarily.
Right. Mm. But it is kind of staggering to realize how many of these well-known artists come from Louisiana. It was a source of great pride when you're reading
absolutely.
The book.
Absolutely. A number of these artists, they show internationally. For instance, you know, Simon Gunnings, the Roland Goldens, the Alan Flatmans, Willie Birch. You know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you see their work. They're well-known, and they're very fine artists and have been recognized for their work over the years.
Now, I love the basic information you give about each person, some of them, you know, what different locations they like, their influences, their training, and some of their influences are really wonderful. I love it when Willie Birch said his influence was life.
That's right.
You know?
Well, that was interesting because I asked each of the artists their influences, and in some cases, many of the artists who were in the book influenced others who were in the book. For instance, Elmore Morgan Jr. But I loved Willie Birch's response, life. You know, what could be more appropriate and truer than that?
And it's so funny. I love that you talk about the fact that many of them prefer to paint landscapes in the studio.
Actually, they do, because of, in many cases, the heat and the bugs.
Right.
But a number of them also prefer to paint plain air, which means on location, out in nature, because they feel they can see and feel and interpret the landscape better by just being there while they paint. Now, many of them also take photographs or do sketches and preliminary studies. They take that back to their studios where they do the actual finished work. And in some cases, the studies are even better than the finished works when you see them.
I know, it's fascinating.
Well, because that's the immediate response to what they see and, more importantly, what they feel while they're there.
And one of the things that struck me in this book, just surveying all of their work, is how close we are to the land here. And, you know, I was really struck when Ron Bechet talked about how all of his landscapes were of locations within 90 minutes of New Orleans.
Yes, that's true.
Nobody has to go very far to see these landscapes.
That's true with all of these artists. You know, all of these artists, as I try to emphasize in the book, that they are exploring their own immediate landscape, the land around them. They're not going out west to do this, or they're going to Canada to paint Venice, as many artists do. They are looking at their own life, their own environment, and how they respond to that. And that's what makes it really beautiful to me.
And some of them came from other places to paint Louisiana, came here and fell in love with the place.
Well, historically, that's always been the case. That back in the middle to late 19th century, when landscape painting became popular, mostly people from other places, you know, young artists from the Atlantic seaboard and northern states coming from France or even England to Louisiana and seeing this landscape. You know, sometimes you don't see what's around you. You need to be from somewhere else to fully appreciate it. But initially that was the case. And then, of course, they taught local artists and teach them how to see, how to feel. Uh-huh. And that's one of the things about writing about artists was wonderful for me, because I really started as a journalist writing about politicians. But once I actually started writing about art and about artists, they really teach you how to see the world around you and how to appreciate it more, whether it's, you know, just an old country road or a flower in a ditch or an old shack somewhere or the inner city. You see much better if you try to see through the eyes of an artist.
Well, and you have a real gift for showing how that changes you, how it changes a person.
Oh, it
does. Know, because every conversation is so interesting with these artists. Mm-hmm. The other thing that struck me is how lucky we are to be able to see art happening. I mean, I see Phil Sandusky and his students painting on the streets of New Orleans all the time.
That's right.
You know, we honor and accept our artists.
That's right. Well, Phil Sandusky is an example of what we were talking about earlier, the plein air painters.
Right.
You know, you see him all over the city. In fact, when I first, just actually before I even met Phil and wrote about him, I saw this tall, thin painter out there in City Park just doing this wonderful landscape of the lagoons and the trees and everything else. And I think that's a fascinating way to create art, is to be right in the middle and feel it while you're there.
And some of them are so committed to the environment. I mean, I was really struck by Jacqueline Bishop and Megan Fleming talking about their sense of the environment, their sense of impending loss. Did working on this book have a special kind of urgency for you? I mean, I think we all feel like the landscape is vanishing right beneath our feet here in Louisiana.
Oh, it does. In fact, you know, I've written about Jackie in the past, and though she doesn't do traditional landscapes as people imagine them to be, but yet her paintings are all about the land. You know, they're allegorical paintings. She's extremely concerned about the preservation of the landscape. In fact, she spends a great deal of time painting in the Central and South America with the vanishing forest, jungle forest there. And she's doing work here in Louisiana, too. And even the realist paintings, when they paint the marshlands, it's sort of trying to capture something that exists now, because who knows what the future will hold for the regions that they're painting, the marshlands, the forests, the swamps, because, you know, the coastline is vanishing sometimes slowly and sometimes very quickly. And they're capturing that moment. Yeah.
And one of the things that struck me, too, is, you know, you think, how many ways can you paint light and air and water?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a magnificent answer to that question.
Yes.
You know, so many poets come here and are struck by the light. Mm-hmm. And write about it for years and years and years. And there is something so special about the light in Louisiana.
Well, painting is about light, you know, and how it plays upon the landscape, how it plays upon the trees, how the light cuts through the mist or the fog and creates this wonderful gold aura in our wetlands. So it really is about light. You know, you look at the 19th century painters, early 20th century painters, the Meekers and all of those that were painting here. Swamps are in other places, but not the way that iridescence cuts through the light and through the swamp and it makes it glow. So it is about light, and it is beautiful.
And so much water in this book. So many
needs water. It's like, well, oh, yeah.
That's true. And to get to North Louisiana, and even there, you see some of the painters in North Louisiana going to their marshes and their lakes to capture that light. But in other cases where you have, for instance, in the Ruston area, there's a painter there by the name of Albino Hinojosa. And he's just captivated by the feel of the landscape, the past agrarian landscape that you see in his work. So not so much light there as it is sort of a romantic past of what the land was like in an earlier age.
And then you think of those dark, dark landscapes of George Rodrigues.
Of George Rodrigues, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you know, George, of course, he's famous for his Blue Dog series and those wonderful paintings he does of families under the oak trees. But he says, you know, the one thing he missed about Louisiana when he was away in California was the oak tree.
Oh, yeah.
Those wonderful, warm oak trees. To him, that was symbolic of Acadiana. So he continued to paint those throughout his career.
Mm. As it is to so many people.
It is.
It's amazing.
It is. Well, there's another artist by the name of Ausculus Ozols, who was the founder of the New Orleans Academy of Fine Art. You always see oak trees in his paintings, wonderful old live oaks. But then he once told me that when you define his name in Latvian, because he's from Latvia, means oak. Ozols means oak. So they're almost portraits of himself in the Louisiana
lovely.
Landscape. Yeah, that's right.
Well, so many great artists, so many great paintings in this book. It is a treasure. We've been talking with John Kemp, whose beautiful new book is Expressions of Place, the Contemporary Louisiana Landscape. You can meet him Saturday, December 10th from 11 to 1 at Bay Books in Bay St. Louis, and later that same day from 5 to 7 at Lemieux Gallery on Julia Street. John, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's wonderful.
Louisiana, my home sweet home. Louisiana, my home sweet home. I'm coming back, mama, back where I belong. Lafayette,
Andrea Panzica does it all. She's a teacher, she works in visual arts, dancing, and she's studying to become a Louisiana master naturalist. Today we'll be talking about how all of those things inspire her life as a poet. She's a graduate of the University of New Orleans Creative Writing Workshop, and her new book is Rusted Bells and Daisy Baskets. Andrea Panzica, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much for having me, Susan.
Now, you're a Florida girl. You grew up in Merritt Island, which inspires a lot of your work. The beach, that whole environment where water meets sand, where borders meet. And you write about leaving it, you know? And that's where the title of your book comes from, what you see when you're leaving, right?
It does. You're right. It comes from the last line of the first poem in the book.
So the book begins with a sense of motion forward, you know, and then it becomes a bi-coastal book. And the next thing we know, you're in Santa Monica, California on the beach.
Yes.
And I wonder if you'd read that poem for us. It's called The Infinite Santa Monica Sand.
Sure thing. The Infinite Santa Monica Sand. I had no interest in Los Angeles until I saw every place name I'd ever heard in movies on one map. Because of scenes I'd seen on screen, I didn't believe when someone told me the ocean is too cold to swim. When I visited Santa Monica, I had to stick my big toe in. From the clean streets where homeless people slept, I descended the steps down the Palisades, trudged 300 calf-crunching steps across the wide beach. My shoes, made of basket-like jute, collected thousands of grains, unintentional souvenirs. In a diner bathroom, I beat my flats against a wall above a trash can. Out fell cupfuls of sand. Even now, months removed, I find grains on my toes after wearing those shoes. A science teacher once asked my class to help us grasp the smallness of atoms, to picture ourselves on a plane looking down at the beach. If we'd never set foot in sand and saw that strip of tan, imagine our shock at hearing it's made of billions of grains. If I captured pieces of that beach, did I leave behind some of me?
And of course you did.
I did, yes.
So, beach girl, how did you end up in New Orleans?
Well, my dad grew up here, and my mom went to Tulane, so they met back in the 70s. And he has five brothers and sisters, and so we would visit a lot from Florida for Christmas and things like that. So I spent a lot of time here as a kid, and my dad passed away back in 07. So he and my mom moved here in 01, and I moved here to kind of help my mom out and to, you know, spend time with her. And I had graduated from FSU in Tallahassee, and, you know, I kind of was just sort of hanging around working and didn't really have a plan, so I decided, why not move here?
And you studied creative nonfiction in the writer's workshop, right?
I did, yeah. It was hard for me to choose because I love poetry and nonfiction, so I just kind of went with nonfiction. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everything I kind of write is really nonfiction. So, yeah.
Well, a lot of people won't admit that, actually.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Now, one of the things I love about these poems and I love about this collection is that you draw a lot of inspiration from books and reading. And there's one poem I especially love on turning 30, and you're meditating on an overdue library book. So I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about writing that poem and about that book.
Sure. I was in Carolyn Hembury's class, and I had read Heart is a Lonely Hunter the summer before, and she mentioned liking this book, Isadora Duncan's My Life. And so I'm a dancer, as I say in the poem, so I had to go get this book. And I went to the library right downstairs from where we are now, and I checked it out, and I noticed that it had last been checked out 15 years ago. And I just couldn't wrap my mind around that. And so I guess in the poem, I'm attempting to do that, sort of tracing a timeline of the book was still there and I was doing this and, you know, this happened, Katrina happened. That. So, yeah.
And another writer whose books have made a terrific difference for you is Zora Neale Hurston.
Yes.
Another Florida writer.
Exactly. She grew up in Eatonville, Florida, which is not far from where I grew up in Merritt Island. So we share a sort of fascination with the outdoors. And so the same summer, actually, I read Heart is a Lonely Hunter. I was in Elizabeth Stevie's class, Southern Literature, and we read Their Eyes Were Watching God, which is set in Florida. And actually, the poem in this book, Gator Takes Travel Cue from Janie and Teacake, I had written that before I read that book. And I realized afterwards that basically that's the plot of the book, in a sense. Like, they trace the same sort of paths. So then I sort of retroactively gave it that title. But yeah, Zora.
That's a great title.
Yeah, thank you.
And I do like the way gators appear in your poems, which
yes.
is perfectly appropriate. Now, you do a lot of visual work. You teach puppetry
yes.
at Heinz,
mm-hmm.
and you built this wonderful model of the house you grew up in when you were working on a poem.
Yes.
And I wonder if you talk about that kind of visual element in your life and how important it is.
Yeah, I guess I've always had trouble picking a focus or a way to go. And so now I've just kind of decided to try to embrace everything. But building that model that you mentioned, it's really kind of what I think prompted the dreams I had of the house. I say I had nearly nightly dreams. And just recreating the floor plan and then building the walls, it brought back memories. Oh, I would sit in there and play with toys, or, you know, oh, I watch TV in there. So I really think that when you work in visual or just another field, that can kind of help access places that might have been unlocked before. Because if you're working in words a lot, you know, you're in one mind frame. But if you introduce another thing, like comics, for example, I found that I was remembering things while I was writing my thesis, maybe younger memories before language was really as a big part of my life. So, yeah, I just think that all of the different visual and other parts, they really play off of each other and help make a richer you know, set of tools to work with, I guess.
And what about the puppetry? Because that's teaching people to give voice to things, isn't it? What sorts of things do you do there?
Well, it's really funny because I had never really done puppetry before, but it was sort of, I mean, I had done, you know, scripting and visual art. So all of the ingredients were there, all the elements. So yeah, I work with kindergartners. So yeah, we talked a lot about emotions, which is what they were learning about in school too. And yeah, how would your voice sound like if you were feeling happy or comfortable? Now, how would it sound if you were feeling uncomfortable? So really expressing and getting those different voices out, that's been a lot of fun.
So there's a time when you know it's time to write and a time when you know it's time to undertake some creative act with your hands.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny because I was actually a math major at first when I got to FSU, and then I went to education, and then I went to writing. So I was thinking about this the other day. I was walking to my calculus class, and it was so nice outside, and I just turned around, and my friends and I all drove out to the woods, and I ended up working at a restaurant on campus, and math was great and everything, but I wanted to touch something. So It's been a big part of my life, definitely.
And now, I'm curious to hear more about your training to be a Louisiana Master Naturalist. What does that involve, and what do you hope to do with that?
Well, what that's been is there's about 9 workshops. I call myself a bad naturalist, sort of a nod to Roxane Gay's Bad Feminist, because I missed a few of the workshops, I have to admit. So I'm trying to become certified. But there's about 9 workshops, I believe, and you have to go to at least 7. And then there's continuing education and volunteer requirements. So what I'm really hoping to do is I want to develop a kind of nature/arts workshop where, you know, a group of people from adults to children would go outside, do some sort of picking up litter or plants, some sort of stewardship, and maybe some recreation too, like paddle boards, I think would be great, or kayaking, or even just hiking. And then kind of reflecting through arts, maybe writing exercises, maybe comics. I think that that would be like a really great experience for people, because when I was younger, in the book I mentioned going to the swamps with one of my teachers. And that happened maybe twice. But the impact has been so long lasting for me. And so I think that that kind of like permeable classroom walls can really, really impact students and, you know, help give them a sense of place and a sense of like empowerment. And I've applied for a couple grants and come close. So I'm really hoping to make that happen.
Well, this is a place where more of that needs to happen. I know, for example, like the Alvar Library is doing a writing workshop in the garden, which is such a sweet little space. And I know Richard Goodman here takes his students kayaking. Mm-hmm. And as you say, once you've seen the swamp, you never forget it. I mean, it remains an inspiration.
Definitely.
So I think that's an exciting path to travel along. And you're constantly learning things. That's what I love about talking with you. And you went to a really exceptional workshop this summer as well that made a big difference for you.
I did. I went to Provincetown, the Fine Arts Work Center up there, and I worked for a week with Eileen Miles, and she's a big influence. Actually, pretty recently, it's funny because I had seen her name and heard of her many times, but it's like when you keep seeing an actor in a movie, but you don't really realize it's the same actor. So yeah, I spent a week with her, and it was just really great. And I rented a bike and rode to the beach. I mean, it was just a really fun week. It was carnival there, so there was a parade and just a lot of fun.
A parade in Province.
Yeah.
Let's think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
So how do you find the poetry community in New Orleans? Has it been a support for you?
Very much so. Back when I first, you know, was getting ready for the book to come out, Megan Burns was very helpful. You know, I read at Blood Jet and the New Orleans Poetry Festival, which is new, and I'm excited. Hopefully I'll go back this year. Yeah, and Carolyn Hembry, you know, she always has this calendar of all these readings to go to. I was the nonfiction editor of Bayou for a time, an associate editor. So yeah, there's just been a great community. I love Tennessee Williams Fest. I go every year. That's one thing is, you know, I love Florida. I really do, where I grew up. But having all these cultural opportunities here in New Orleans, I mean, it's really, you can't beat it.
Sounds like home.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, we've been talking with Andrea Panzica, whose new book is Rusted Bells and Daisy Baskets. Thanks so much, Andrea.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Poet Elizabeth Gross celebrates the release of her new chapbook, The Escape Artist, as well as her birthday, along with writers Anya Groner and Carlos Henderson, Tuesday, November 29th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Richard Campanella discusses the architectural geography of New Orleans from the 1700s to the 2010s, Wednesday, November 30th at 7 at the Freeman Auditorium, Tulane University, sponsored by the New Orleans Center for the Gulf South. John Pluker and Monica Mencken are the featured readers in the Blood Jet Poetry Series, Wednesday, November 30th at 8 at BJ's in the Bywater. Bill Lasher discusses and signs Eve of 100 Midnights, the star-crossed love story of two World War II correspondents and their epic escape across the Pacific. That's Wednesday, November 30th at 7 at the Uptown Jewish Community Center, 5342 St. Charles Avenue. Gwen Tompkins and Alan Shipton sign Danny Barker, A Life in Jazz, Thursday, December 1st from 6 to 8:30 at the Historic New Orleans Collection, 533 Royal Street. Ryan Fertel discusses and signs The One True Barbecue, Thursday, December 1st at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Cassandra Harrell signs her new cookbook, Soul Food Advisor, Thursday, December 1st at 5:30 at the Poseidon Oyster Sushi Bar, 2100 St. Charles Avenue, and again Friday, December 2nd at 5:30 at the Community Book Center on Bayou Road. Meet George Graham, author of Acadiana Table, Cajun and Creole Home Cooking from the Heart of Louisiana, Saturday, December 3rd at 10 at Octavia Books. Visit Santa and meet Elaine Nandry III, author of You'll Know One When You See One, and Dalt Wonk, author of The Laughing Lady, Saturday, December 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 at the Garden District Bookshop. The Dream Caravan rolls into town Sunday, December 4th from 11 to 7 at the Arts Estuary, 1024 Elysian Fields. Among the highlights are workshops about working with end-of-life dreamers, a tribute to Jungian analyst Marion Woodman, and a concert by Fever Dreams. Roger Kamenetz presents a lecture at 3, Natural Dreamwork, An Introduction, and at 4, Poets Niyo Sundari, Rodrigo Toscano, Bill Lavender, Britt Estep, and Elizabeth Gross present a reading of poems inspired by dreams, hosted by Roger Kamenetz. Barry Ancelet signs his new bilingual fairy tale, Jean le Chasseur et ses chiens, Sunday, December 4th at the French Library, 3811 Magazine Street. Check out thefrenchlibrary.com for the exact time. This charming new shop features a large selection of children's books in French. Today's guest, poet Andrea Panzica, signs Rusted Bells and Daisy Baskets, Monday, December 5th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. There will be a Polar Express party celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Christmas classic, Sunday, December 4th at 11:30 at Octavia Books. Scott Solomon signs Future Humans, Inside the Science of Our Continuing Evolution, Tuesday, December 6th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Michael Tisserand signs Crazy, George Harriman, A Life in Black and White, Tuesday, December 6th at 6 at Octavia Books. And today's guest, John Kemp, signs Expressions of Place, The Contemporary Louisiana Landscape, Saturday, December 10th, from 11 to 1 at Bay Books in Bay St. Louis, and later that day from 5 to 7 at Lemieux Gallery on Julia Street. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.